some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Whiskey Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 15th, 2011. This is the Craft Brewers Conference pregame show. I'm Jimmy Carboni here from Jimmy's Number 43, joined by my co-host tonight, Ray Dieter from the DBA Bars. How are you, Ray?
I'm all right, Jimmy. How you doing, man?
Ray, I got a little email that said that your birthday's coming up.
Oh, geez. Yeah, whatever.
So we'll leave it at that.
Reverse birthday.
Exactly right.
And Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger, our roving reporter, is in tonight, down from Vermont.
How you doing, Jimmy?
So, Dave, are we going to have a call-in from the Brewers Association?
Yeah, Paul. Actually, I don't remember Paul's last name now, but he's supposed to call in and talk, I think, about the different symposiums they got going on.
So Paul Gatza from the Brewers Association is going to call in. We'll give a quick shout-out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. It's where the beer industry meets retailers and the community of Beer Cloud and all these other great apps. Check out GreatBrewers.com and TheGoodBeerSeal.com, who supports us, 27 New York City bars. Thank you, GoodBeerSeal.com. Hey, Paul Gatza is on the line. Paul, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Good. So I'm going to let Dave Broderick talk to you, ask you a few questions. Thanks for calling in, and thanks, man.
Paul, this is Dave. We're really looking forward to coming out there and doing the seminars. And I'm just wondering, like, how do you put the seminars together? How do you choose your panels and come up with the topics?
We set up a seminar subcommittee made up of members of the brewing community, those who are technical brewing experts like Ken Grossman and John Pinkerton and John Harris and Steve Brott and James Ottolini help us on the technical brewing pieces. Then we also get people from the brew pub side, the packaging brewery side, the sustainability world, and basically build it piece by piece with a bunch of different people who are experts in the industry.
And
from there, what we do is we basically have a proposal process. People submit topics, and we review them, and we create our own presentations. We accept some. We modify some, and it turns into a big mishmash.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone the last couple of years and done the seminars. They're phenomenal. I mean, they're really well put together. And I'm wondering, I mean, obviously, we're beer bar owners, and we wonder if you're ever going to include – maybe a panel of retailers to be part of it. I mean, obviously we do sell a lot of the craft beer, and so I'm just wondering, is that ever under consideration, or is it just really just for brew pubs and breweries?
Yeah, it is under consideration because a lot of brewers sell their beer in some of the finer beer bars around the country. So I would say probably three times over the last decade we had a on-premise retailers panel where we get a mix of people who are, you know, the passionate independents, maybe some retail chain buyers from restaurant chains, just try to mix it up, maybe some wholesalers who can talk about the relationships between the tiers. So it is something we consider and something we talked about definitely for this year, but we're probably going to do it next year.
Yeah, there was one, I was looking at the seminars, and there was one that said, an on-premise panel, but it didn't say what it was going to be. So that, do you know what that one is, or...
Yeah, that one didn't come together for this year. We tried to put one together, and then we decided to wait a year till we had our ducks in a row more for that. So we're not really going to have the on-premise panel. We'll have an off-premise panel, but we decided to go with another topic in the long run.
I just want to let you know that Jimmy, Ray, and I are free for San Diego next year.
All right.
Hey, Paul, this is Ray Dieter from DBA. A couple of years ago, maybe about 10 almost now, when the conference was in Arizona, it was in Phoenix, Arizona, and there was a panel, and I was privileged to be a part of that panel, and I was there with Don Younger and Chris Black from Falling Rock in Denver, and a few other people.
I think Judy Ashworth was Judy on that title.
Absolutely, so. Judy was there. Yep, she was that. It was actually it was Don, me, Judy, and Chris. I think that was a panel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really great, and it was really well attended too. And I think it was really interesting because back then I think a lot of the brewers really were interested in what we had to say because they never had it. They were like asking us how do we help you sell our beer. And you know, and it was a really great, panel, and I think it'd be a great way to, a great thing to repeat one of these days when you have a chance. And San Diego's a great place to do it.
I think we did one maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I know we had Kip Snyder from Yard House Restaurant Group on a panel, and I think we had some other on-premise buyers as well.
Hey, Paul,
buyers.
So you're the director of the Brewers Association. Is that your title?
That is my title, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit of what the Brewers Association does, just for our regular listeners out there?
Sure. We're the not-for-profit trade association for America's small and craft brewers. So what we do are programs internal for brewers, such as technical brewing, educational programs, through, you know, our conferences or our magazines or online. We also do government affairs work on behalf of all small brewers where we can collectively speak as one. As well, we have a craft beer marketing program in which we do outreach to the general public and to the media about what's going on with craft brewers out there and trying to get their stories out there and present craft brewers in a positive light.
So who are some of the more exciting people you have speaking at this conference next week?
The one who I'm really excited about is a man by the name of Jack McAuliffe. Jack McAuliffe started the New Albion Brewing Company back in 1976, and he sort of created the model of the brewers who would basically weld their own breweries from scrap metal and equipment themselves, and that became a model for other brewers like Ken Grossman at Sierra Nevada and brewers through the 80s and early 90s. Now, you know, we see most of the startups come in with some, you know, pretty refined, pretty nice equipment. But back then, you know, it really wasn't available, and so people scrapped it together themselves. And he's been out of the brewing scene for decades until last year. So this will be the first time he's been at one of these conferences, and it should be pretty interesting.
And that's a historical, that's the historical seminar where he's... there's like a woman that's going to be on that as well with him. Like so they're doing like a retrospective on. I remember reading the brochure on that. Can you like tell us a little bit about like what he's going to be doing?
Yeah, they're taking a long view of the big picture. One of the women who he's speaking with is Maureen Ogle, who wrote an outstanding book, Ambitious Brew, which is the story of some of the people behind American brewing from the very beginning.
I love that book.
And has a great section on the craft movement. So that should be pretty exciting. She'll be doing a book signing there too, as well as Jack McAuliffe's daughter, Renee DeLuca, will be leading that group, kind of taking the lessons of the past and kind of trying to project a little forward about, you know, where the brewing industry is going in the United States.
All right. And is part of your job also working, studying the business of craft beer?
Absolutely. I am the stat keeper. I put on my my nerdy little mathematician's hat and gather all the beer sales data for breweries all over the country. And so, you know, we can let our members know how the craft industry is doing, how many new people are getting into it. And it's pretty amazing to see the growth in the industry right now. We've got about 600 breweries in our brewery and planning list that are just you know, ready to go from the drawing board to their own breweries.
Hey, Paul, are you a brewer yourself? Are you a home brewer, or have you?
Yep.
Your hands dirty?
Started home brewing back in 1990. Started working in a commercial brewery, Boulder Beer, back in 93, and was part owner of a homebrew supply shop in Boulder, Colorado, from 93 to 98 when I came over to the association.
So you got some chops in the business then.
Yep, I know beer. I like beer.
You know, the funny thing was, I was just going to say, Paul, dazzle us with some numbers, and you just did. So you have 600 craft breweries online, ready to start up
soon. Ready. Well, in various stages of readiness, let's put it that way. Some will never make it off the board, and there'll be others who make it off the drawing board and into fruition that we haven't heard of yet. So we know of about 600 people or companies that are looking to get going into this. Right now, we have over 1,700 breweries in this country, and that's more than we've had since for about 110, 112 years.
Definitely wow. Since Prohibition.
Pretty awesome. Are there any more stats you want to tell us about?
Things that we may not see. Well, craft brewers have just under 5% market share in the United States. In parts of the country, particularly the Mountain West and California, craft share is double digits. And in other parts of the country, it's a little less than that, but growing fast. While the southern part of the U.S. is the smallest region for craft, it's also the fastest growing. So it's happening all over the place.
Well, the laws are changing all over the country, too, allowing this kind of beer to be made. I mean, that's an important part of it, is the laws kind of fall away, preventing home brewing and preventing, you know, craft brewing. Because of the...
Yeah, we've seen a lot of alcohol content laws get updated in the last decade.
And bottle sizes.
Bottle size is another one. Another thing we're seeing, which is really helping craft brewers, is that the wholesalers and retailers really want craft beer. And they get it. They can make some money on it. And they really want to get that those craft products out there. They're small companies themselves, and they support other small companies. And as a result, the wholesalers have beer-knowledgeable people now, and it's the level of education about beer quality and what beer can be in this country is just expanding quickly.
How's the excise tax law coming along?
We do have the bill introduced in the Senate by Senator Kerry, who led it last time. Well, that bill came back up again with him and Senator Crapo introducing that. We're waiting for introduction of the excise tax bill in the House at any time. What the bill will do is, for the smallest brewers in the country, it'll cut their excise tax in half, which they can then reinvest back into creating more jobs and buying more equipment.
All right. It sounds like you've got quite the job.
Yeah. There's a lot going on, but I get to work with great people, and I get to drink a lot of really outstanding beer.
Hey, Paul, when you bring the festival back to New Orleans? That was fun when you guys were down there.
That was 2003. I don't know when we're going to head back that way again. We didn't draw as well in the South as we do in other parts, and
there's a lot of distractions
for us to get back to Portland, Oregon, which we haven't been to in 2001. So, I think what we're looking at is probably after San Francisco this year. We're already booked for San Diego next year, then D.C. in 2013, then Denver in 14, and I think we're going to start looking in the Pacific Northwest for 15.
I know Steve Hindy said he was lobbying for New York City. Is that ever going to happen, do you think? Or
It might happen at some point. The issue with New York is the room rates. While the scene there is definitely outstanding, and our members would just have a blast and a ball in New York City, we're a little concerned that they wouldn't be able to afford it.
Well, a couple of guys that stay on my sofa, we can help them out.
I guess we have a lot to talk about. Well, we actually have a craft brewery here. We have Mark Jameda. Is that how you pronounce it, Mark? Mark's the brewer at Chelsea Brewery. And you have attended the Craft Brewers Conference in the past.
In Philly, when it's on the East Coast. It's rarely on the East Coast. That's a problem. It should come to New York.
Yeah, we did Boston in 09, and D.C., as I said, we're going to be in 13. So we're getting back there a little more. Trying to spread it around.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Paul. We're really appreciated that you called in. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more to Mark from Chelsea Brewing, and we'll get behind the Get Real New York, which is coming this weekend to New York City. We'll be back in a moment on Beer Sessions Radio.
We belong. No, it's gone.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today's podcast is brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a comprehensive website aimed at bringing the beer community together. Check out GreatBrewers.com. It's all about the beers. All right, we've got Mark, the brewer from Chelsea. Mark, say your last name because I can't pronounce it.
Shmeda.
Mark Shmeda from Chelsea Brewery. You've been working there a long time, haven't you?
Since 97.
Yeah. So if I like a beer from Chelsea, it's I can it's pat you
my,
on the back.
It's got my fingers in it. It's got.
And
it's
if
got,
I don't like it, I should blame your boss, Pat.
No, you should call me up, Tim.
So what's Pat's last name?
Pat Green.
Pat's the owner of Chelsea Brewery.
Yes, he is.
We know him because he's out there, despite owning a brewery and a brew pub, he's out there delivering very often. He's out there on a pickup truck. How is it that local breweries can just self-deliver? Is there a different law?
In New York State, you're allowed to be self-distributed.
Because so, I know I get the guys from Barrier delivered directly to me. Chelsea does. Right. I really like that.
Yeah, we cannot go to New Jersey. We can't go to Connecticut. We can only deliver in New York State.
What do you think about that, Ray? Don't you think it's great that a local brewery can just come and drop
off
some
No, I think it's
kegs?
Great because we actually have contact with the guys that work at the brewery. Because when you work with a big distributor, it's like the guys that are bringing the beer into your bar have no connection with the beer that's actually being served. But when you get the guy that's actually got the truck with the name of the brewery on it, or the, you know, he's bringing it in, he knows what the beer is, and that does make a difference.
And actually, it's the only, you know, they set up the three-tier system, and the brew pub is actually the only thing that breaks the three-tier system because they get to do all three tiers themselves. They produce it, they can self-distribute in their own state, and they can retail it right on their premise.
But there's a limit to how much your production is. It's based on your production, right? It's got to be below a certain amount.
Right, but it still is a fairly high production.
It's definitely one of the most, you know, profitable ways to go, way it's set up, just because of the laws.
And like I said, we do about 65% off-premise sales in draft sales only. We bottled from until 2001, from 96 to 2001. We don't bottle anymore. It was not that profitable. The kegging operation is profitable, and, you know, the rest of the beer we sell in our pub.
And about how many barrels of beer do you make every year?
We're coming up on, like, this year, last year we did almost 3,000. So 6,000.
So you're still a very small brewery.
Yeah, very small.
And all that stuff's done right there in the Chelsea Piers, right at that brew pub.
And you're in New York City, in Manhattan.
In Manhattan, foot of 18th Street, right on the river.
I got to say, it's one of the great views in the city, just to sit, you know, grab a couple of beers and sit out there in that little dock area.
Look at Hoboken and the
Hoboken,
sunset.
Hoboken, yeah. Right. Hoboken, I'm dying.
So, Chelsea, one reason you're here is you have a really great relationship with the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and we have Mary Azette, who's been a big part of that, as well as other things like Get Real New York. How are you, Mary?
Good.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Homebrew Alley, the homebrew competition?
Yeah, so Homebrew Alley is the New York City Homebrewers Guild annual homebrew competition, and we've held it at Chelsea since we started holding it, which I think this was our fifth year. I could be wrong about that.
I think that's right.
Yeah, fifth year. So basically, it's the only homebrew competition currently being held in New York City.
All right. And this year, we were tasting a beer right now. It's called Alpha Pale Ale. Was that from this year's winner?
That was last year's winner.
So the 2009 winner, was it 2010?
Ray Girard.
So Ray Girard, who's from the Homebrew Guild.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about how that came about. Why did you pick that beer to produce?
That comes about all the best of show, basically. They take all the gold medal winners, and then they do a best of show 1, 2, 3, and then it was the Brewmaster's Choice Award, where the brewers choose a beer that could possibly be made. Because, you know, we don't do Belgian style, so there's certain beers that we can't make. We picked this one because it's a really nice American-style beer. It would go good with our yeast, and I think it worked out fine.
Mary, tell us a little more about the process, because I know you've been involved for many years with the Homebrew Guild.
Yeah. So basically, we solicit homebrew entries. Anybody from all over the world can send us their entries. I know actually we got some beers from a guy in Las Vegas this year. Each homebrewer sends two bottles of whatever example you entered in a particular category. And then we judge. So we started, I think, around 9 a.m. on a Sunday morning. You judge by category. So you might have a stout category or a strong Belgian ale category or a lager category. You go through and you can judge anywhere from maybe 7 to 13 beers a flight. So each judge is trained and recognized by the Beer Judge Certification Program, which is an international nonprofit organization. And basically, you select a first, second, and third out of every category. And then, as Mark mentioned, the first place goes on to Best of Show, which is held at the end. And you basically sit down with all the beers. There might be, 26 beers. And you go through and you pick the Best of Show and then first, second, third. And then we were lucky enough to have Mark with us last year, and he chose a Brewmaster's Choice. And that's a great incentive for homebrewers. I mean, everyone loves... One of the great things about homebrew competitions is that homebrewers get great feedback on their beers. So, The judges know how to identify flavor and aroma, flaws in the beer, and have some suggestions on how to correct those flaws. And then also, it's just good to hear that you're making a good beer. You can score high. It's great to win a ribbon, but it's even better to be chosen to be brewed at a commercial brewery. And Ray Gerard he's a member of the New York City Homebrew Guild. He was president. He's a former president. I think he was president last year. And Mark selected his beer. And I think you guys, how long ago did you brew it? A few weeks ago?
At least it's been out in the market for maybe 2-3 weeks now.
Yeah. So it was very exciting. I mean, to have, for a home brewer to enter a competition and then be chosen to have their brew brewed by a commercial brewery is just, it's a super great thing.
So, Mark, did you bring these growlers of your beer today?
Yes.
All right. What else do we have besides the Alpha Pale Ale?
The Black Hole Triple X Stout and the Hop Angel IPA, which are two of our regular beers on draft that are available around town. I also want to mention Nicholas Walter is here. He's the other brewer at Chelsea, and he was instrumental in getting this recipe, built up from a 5.5 gallon batch to a 30 barrel batch. So,
hi, Nicholas.
Let him say.
Yeah, tell us what you did. Say hi and tell us how you did that.
It's really just mostly a linear scaling. You have your homebrew recipe that's usually somewhere between 10 and 20 pounds of grain, and we know that you get much better efficiencies when you do a commercial batch, obviously anywhere from 20 to 30% better efficiency on that scale. I used to work at the St. Arnold Brewing Company in Houston, Texas, and I had the great pleasure of designing a beer, which was an Imperial Pumpkin Stout, which started as a 5-gallon recipe and went up to a 120-barrel recipe. And it's that same idea. You scale up linearly, assuming that you get much better efficiency with your grain and extremely higher efficiency with your hop usage.
So you don't just double and triple and quadruple the recipe.
If you want to do it roughly, you double, triple, or times 100, and so
that's why I've never been able to be a home brewer.
Yeah. And then you
I just
take
double
off,
the recipe,
and then you take off some percentage. Kind of, you have a feel for your system as well. We know that how much grain you should use to get approximately a 5.2% alcohol beer, which is what the Alpha 5 is.
So in the same way, if I was a real small brewer, I was only making like a 1-barrel system or something like that, and I wanted to go up, brew at Sly Fox or something like that, I would really have to change the recipe.
Yes, you would. The same idea again. From a 1-barrel, even different from, say, a 5-gallon, it would still be a scaling up, but you have a much better efficiency again with a 1-barrel than you would with a 5-gallon system.
All right. Ray, you have any good memories from Chelsea Brewing Company? I bet you do.
Mostly just having a nice pint of beer and sitting watching the sunset over the river. I love that location. It's just a great place to enjoy a great beer.
It is an amazing location. Mary Azette is also, she writes for MyLifeOnCraft.com, which is kind of having a resurgence. I noticed
Yes. You're
making a lot more posts.
I'm trying.
You've been, what are some of the favorite tastings you've been going to?
Oh, gosh. Now that you ask me, my mind's completely blank. I went to a fantastic Barrier Brewing tasting at Beer Table a couple weeks ago. That's probably one of my favorite that I've been to lately.
So Barrier Brewing and Beer Table, all our friends.
Yeah.
This is a cool show because we're talking about the Craft Brewers Conference that's next week. We got Mark from Chelsea Brewing on, and you guys are doing a really cool event too.
Yeah.
Get Real New York this weekend.
Saturday and Sunday. We've got four sessions. from 12 to 3 Saturday and Sunday. We have a VIP session from 4 to 5 and then 5 to 8 both days. The Saturday second session is sold out, and I think the Saturday first session is almost sold out, but we do have tickets available for Sunday. So it's basically, it's a cask ale and food festival. We're going to have over 100 cask beers, at least 30 homebrew, cask-conditioned homebrews from local homebrewers, and then food from local restaurants and artisanal food vendors.
My God, that is an undertaking.
Yeah.
Over 100 casks of ale.
Oh, yeah.
So are you racking them up? How is that being logistically put together?
Well, we have the help of a distributor. Uh-huh. And
you can say their name.
Union.
Union.
Yeah, is helping out. Actually, my co-organizers, Chris Kuzmi and Patrick Doniger, just walked in, so they can talk a little bit about they handled the beer acquisition. But yeah, it's incredibly exciting. The first one was held last September, and we just had such a great time. We had, I think we tapped almost 100 casks then. It was just super exciting to see all those casks get tapped. And you know, a lot of people came who didn't know what real ale was, and right. They really enjoyed it, and it was just, it's fantastic.
I mean, cask ale in New York City is catching fire now.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, it's we started doing it at DBA when we first opened, basically, back in the early 90s. And to see the growth in the city and the country, I guess, is just really astounding, and I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So in September, when you did the first Get Real New York, you guys made some unique apparatuses. Could you tell me about a couple, Chris or Patrick?
Are you talking about the ones we served, the homebrew, right?
Yeah, you did some unique apparatuses.
Yeah, so Chris...
custom crafted.
Chris and I actually made some hand pump... I don't know what you call them.
They were hand pumps.
Yeah, they're basically... They're hand pumps. Engines.
Chris, get it. Get it.
Yeah.
These are homemade beer engines based off an article from Brew Your Own Magazine, first published, I think it was 1997, then reissued in 2006. And it was just a real small 8x8-inch kind of cabinet that held...
an RV faucet?
That's an RV, yeah. $30 hand pump. It's the same pump as we use in beer bars, but it's only the chamber is about two ounces each one. It's perfect for the festival.
And that was actually cool. So Chris and I put 10 of those together, and I think we're going to build more tomorrow night for this fest. But the cool thing is that anybody at home who homebrews can cask condition their ale and build one of these things super easy. And then, you know, instead of having a keg party, you can have a cask party at your place. So
are you guys treating the homebrewers and the other cask beers equally?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very equally.
Patrick, get on. Patrick, the mad scientist behind Get Real New York.
We're treating them very equally. The homebrewers are going to be mixed in with their with commercial brewers or commercial casks, and they're actually going to have their own section too. And it'll be mostly Get Real will be highlighting a lot of homebrewers more than commercial brewing, because we want to create that festival around homebrewers and show what homebrewers can do.
All right.
You're cool. A very brave man.
it's a big event.
I'm surrounded by good people.
So you have Saturday and Sunday in New York City. What's the website? Get Real NY.
GetRealNY.com. And I think we just sold out in Saturday's session. So if you want to go, get your tickets for Sunday ASAP.
All right. I want to bring it back to Dave from Blind Tiger. We've still got Mark from Chelsea here. Dave, what's your association with Chelsea? I mean, you must have carried them on and off for how many years now?
Right since the beginning, since 96. We've got their beer. We got actually a gravity pin of their beer right now. And I was just talking to Mark about I need more. It's hard to get gravity pins.
Which one do you have?
What do we have right now?
Alpha
what do we
Pilo?
Have right now, Mark? Oh, it is the Alpha Pilo. You're right.
Pilo.
Yeah, we have that right now. It just went on. That's why I didn't know.
Do you have any of your own casks or pins that you send out to other breweries, Dave?
Yeah, I do. I have both a firkin and a pin, and we're actually going to expand that. So it makes it a lot easier.
And how does that work?
Basically, either I'll take it or we'll ship it to someone that we want beer from. And, I mean, obviously it has to go through a distributor, but...
Obviously.
Yes, of course.
Always. And so I'll go up and, you know, I'll work it out with, you know, whoever the distributor is for that brand. And you know, I'll do most of the work. So usually they give me a little bit of a break.
Well, the great thing about having your own cooperage is that you don't have to pay those crazy deposits.
Exactly right.
And Ray, do you have a cask ale coming up for the spring as well?
Oh God, yeah, we're doing a cask festival. It's our fifth Williamsburg Cask Festival coming up in I think it's April 24th for that weekend. It's going to be great. We're having last time we had one in January. We had about 21 casks that went in about 12 hours, and I think we're going to try and double that volume. at DBA Williamsburg for the. It's Easter weekend. I just realized that. It's Easter weekend.
That sounds like a good Easter
drink,
party.
It's a good drinking weekend.
So, Mary, is that your last comment of this segment before we take a break? Tell us like two of the beers that we should try at Get Real New York this weekend.
You're supposed
to come on knowing this stuff. Come on.
I know. Oh, yes. Chris and Patrick's homebrew is actually going to be poured. You know, I actually haven't had time to look at the updated beer list. I've been busy coordinating other aspects of the festival.
So, Chris and Patrick's and Chris Kuzme, tell us, what's another beer we should try that at Get Real New York?
First of all, it's interesting. This is Patrick's first ever homebrew that we did together. So yeah. It's a Russian Imperial Stout, and it's going to be a fantastic one. Secondly, actually, this is another sneak peek of what's to come in June. Wandering Star will have a Mild at Heart, which is a 4.2% dark mild, which will be very fun.
Chris, when's there a beer coming into the market?
Hopefully May.
It's a Wandering Star.
Yep.
I got to say,
I've heard good things about the mild.
We're very excited about it.
We do occasionally get a cask over at DBA Williamsburg.
Yeah.
How does that happen, Ray?
I don't know.
Mary, give us one more.
It comes down from Beer Mountain.
Give us one more beer that you think we should try at Get Real New York.
So looking at the list, here's two that I would highly recommend. The Kelso IPA, that's one of my favorite IPAs on the market.
In cask?
Period. This is double dry hopped with Simcoe. I think it's going to be fantastic. The other thing is the Barrier Ruthless Rye IPA. We were lucky to have a cask of that at last September's. I think Evan and Craig at Barrier are doing a fantastic job, and that was a beautiful, fresh cask of beer. So those
you've
are
got
those
a lot of local breweries, and you got some homebrewers.
I'm all about
Get
local
Real New
beer,
York this weekend. All right. We're going to take a short break in a moment. When we come back, we'll talk more with our friend. We have Dennis Flynn from Stone Brewing on, and we're going to be talking about Stone in San Diego here on Beer Sessions Radio. From school. Won't you let me meet you at the pool? Maybe Friday I can get tickets for the dance. Now take you. Ooh. Won't you tell your dad, get off my back? Tell him what we said about painted black. Rock and roll's here to stay. Come inside, well, it's okay. Now shake you.
The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., Chef Erica Wides hits the airwaves to become your own personal chef instructor. Chef Wides, along with esteemed guests from the culinary world, dissect topics that range from the complex to the deceptively simple, combining classic culinary know-how, personal experiences, and the occasional virtual history lesson. Why We Cook is a great listen for culinary vets and rookies alike. Again, that's Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. That's a big shout out to our co-hosts, our network hosts, whatever. What's the word for it? Erica Wiles has a great show on right after us on Heritage Radio Network. And I don't know the term for it, but she is one of our peeps, part of the Heritage Radio Network here. We've got some great things going on at Good Brew Seal Bars. We've got tomorrow night at Blind Tiger. We've got the Stone event featuring a great list from Stone Brewing Company. And because of that, we've got Dennis, who is the Mr. Stone himself, here with Dave Broderick. Dave, what would you say about Dennis Flynn? He's Mr. Stone Brewing for the East Coast, right?
Well, definitely.
He's at every beer event I go to.
Yeah.
He's exuberant and friendly and a great representative of his brewery.
He is everywhere.
Yeah.
And
try and make the rounds.
You make the rounds. And it was funny when I was doing my beer tour around the country. And
you know his boss is listening right now.
I know, exactly.
I'm pretty sure we have Greg Koch.
I'm waiting for Greg.
Who do we have, Greg Koch or Mitch Steele?
Cook.
Who's, and,
oh, you, you've got Greg Cook and Mitch Steelon. You know, I wasn't a former mayor of New York, nor am I related, so I pronounce it differently.
Yeah, you're Greg exactly. Cook like Jim Cook from Sam Adams.
No.
Or the Cook brothers from Texas.
There's a slight difference. But the first time, Dennis had moved out to San Diego. This is about 4 years ago, before he started working for Stone. And we were doing our beer tour, and I hooked up with him out there for 2 weeks, and he drove me around, and we spent an awful lot of time at Stone. And who knew that he would become Mr. Stone in New York?
I've been privileged, I've been blessed, and I really enjoy it. And, you know, I'm the tri-state rep, so I covered Stone for New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and, you know, just working through our wholesalers in those different regions. And obviously, you know, a lot of the special release beers people are excited about, a lot of the core beers people, you know, may have had in the past, especially the beer geeks. But, you know, I always say to them, like, hey, take the time to go and revisit your old friends.
You know, it is cool, Dave, is actually, before I ever met Dennis, I did see him in your video. It was your RV tour of the
That's
West
right.
Coast. You had this gentleman, you know.
Dennis actually followed us up the coast.
Dennis Flynn.
He followed us up to San Clemente and then up to San Francisco and kind of all over California. So, I mean, he was looking for, you know, right then he knew he wanted to be in the beer business. And so.
He needed a job, obviously.
Yeah, so he just followed us wherever we went.
A lot of time.
So, Dave, the question is, were you trying to shake him?
Yeah, and I did finally, but I had to go east to shake him.
All right,
stayed in California.
So there's a lot going on at Stone Brewing in San Diego, I know Dave has some good questions for you.
Well, I've actually been emailing with Mitch and Greg over the last couple of weeks, and one thing that I didn't really know about the European project until a while ago, so I didn't really get to focus on that in my questions. So I kind of wanted to go there now and just sort of see what, you know, well, a bunch of questions, but one...
Like, what the hell are we thinking?
Yeah, what are you thinking? And but where are some of the, a couple of the places or a few of the places, you've probably narrowed it down at this point in Europe, and well, let's start there.
Okay, yeah, so it's our goal to become the first American craft brewery with to own and operate our own facility in Europe. And after visiting 75 different potential sites in 9 countries, we have narrowed it down to 2 possible locations that we're looking at right now and focusing on due diligence and negotiation. One is in Bruges and one is in Berlin.
So I'm praying for Bruges, only because the last time I went to Belgium, I had so much sugar in my system after about 5, and I needed hops so bad that it would just be a huge plus to be able to go to Stone every day after having all that candy sugar. No,
so,
I'm just kidding.
Greg and Mitch, are you guys saying that the people in Europe are going hop wild for your beers?
Wow. First off, could you rephrase that without the pun?
Oh, well, I mean, so you have a, you guys are yeah, having right. a big demand for your beers in Europe?
No.
No.
We essentially have, I think generously would be to describe it as minuscule. However, you know, when we started out the Stone Brewing Company in 1996, minuscule demand would have been generous at that time. So we don't really require existing demand for us to make some of the decisions we make. We feel pretty comfortable in leading the market and doing, you know, doing our best to create beers that are worth demanding once people learn about them.
So will it be the similar setup to in San Diego with both a you know, like the World Bistro, like a brew pub operation and a production facility, or is it going to be a little bit different?
That is ultimately our goal. Depending on the exact location we end up selecting, it will be a little bit different because the two locations are unique to each other. But we want to, you know, introduce food components. You know, in Europe, I think more in Belgium, pairing food and gastronomy is very common and it's really well done. But frankly, in a lot of the rest of Europe, say Germany or the UK or whatnot, that's still a newer trend, and there's the sort of the old-fashioned pairings, which are old standbys and wonderful, but limited.
And Mitch, is that going to give you a chance to sort of collaborate with a lot of European brewers? I mean, you've already been doing it, obviously, but will you be spending time over there as well, or are you going to be pretty much in San Diego? Will you have a new sort of head brewer for the European operation?
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of both. I think to answer the first question, the collaborations, it certainly looks that way. And I'm very excited about the possibilities with this. You know, every time we've done a collaboration beer, I come away from it, whether it's here in the United States or whether it's some of the work that we've done in Europe previously, it's been very inspirational for me as a brewer. So, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting brewers from all over Europe. You know, despite the market not being where it is here in the United States, there is a craft beer movement in several countries in Europe that's very significant. And, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting these brewers and potentially brewing beer with them. It's, you know, it's very inspirational, like I said, and it's a lot of fun. So hopefully that'll happen. As far as staffing, I'm anticipating, and I don't know for sure yet, but I'm anticipating staying based here in San Diego and then traveling on a fairly regular basis.
Considering that your family lives here, for example.
Yes, I think my family has some say in this. And
you should see your wife and children every once in a while.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
So, Greg and Mitch, so for us here in the East Coast and our listeners, so tell us what your jobs are at Stone Brewing.
Well, I think Mitch's job is much easier to understand. He's got the title of head brewer and production
manager.
Right. Okay, there you go.
So I'm the head brewer and production manager. So what I do is basically direct traffic in the brewery and make sure that we're brewing the right beer and it's of top quality and we're making it at the right time. And as far as new beers come out, you know, coordinating those efforts. Making sure that we have all the ingredients we need and being creative with our beers. And I've got a big team here of very talented and creative brewers. And, it's a good group. And I try to provide some guidance and keep us all on track. And that's what I do.
All right. And, Greg, what's your official job?
Well, it's the classic old question, what do you get when you cross an elephant with a rhinoceros?
I don't know. What do you get when you cross an elephant with a rhinoceros?
Elephino.
You're chief visionary, I think.
So my title is CEO and co-founder, which I mean, you know, means I helped to start this mess. And
so you guys work at Google.
I kind of head up a lot of some of our nutty projects. I've been head of marketing since the beginning, and I write the crap on the back of the bottles. And
you really don't know what you do, do you?
I know, but I consume every day, and I can't possibly get it done. So I must be doing something.
Well, you're very good at it, clearly, because the beer's amazing.
Who names the beers? That's because those names are cool. Is that your job, Greg?
Well, okay, if you think they're cool, in that case, that's me. I argue mostly that a lot of our beers have named themselves. Stone IPA named itself. That was just too damn straightforward.
That was a tough one. How'd you come up with that?
Yeah. Stone Smoked Porter, similarly.
Like Arrogant Bastard. Where did that come from?
Yeah, who came up with Arrogant Bastard? Like, yeah, exactly.
You know, and I'm also the guy that, you know, kind of calls into, you know, radio shows like this and gives shout-outs to my friend Patrick Doniger, who's at Get Real New York, and he's listening to the show as we speak.
He's sitting right here.
He sent me a text. So he's basically sending a text while sitting in the studio. Take that cell phone.
It's because we haven't given him a mic yet.
So, Greg, you didn't answer. How did you come up with Arrogant Bastard?
Well, I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't come up with its name. I was simply the first person to discover what its name already was.
Okay, this is like Michelangelo chipping away the stone from the sculpture, right?
Exactly. I think that might be apropos.
Okay. All right. That was a great non-answer.
But so, it's the truth. It's
okay.
The truth.
Yeah.
The beer spoke to me, and I'm and I mean it in the esoteric terms as well as the literal terms. I mean, this beer said, "This is what my name was," and I'm like, "Oh yeah, well that makes sense."
The beer talks to you, does it?
So Steve Wagner, one of your co-founders, said that he just, you know, I asked him about the beginning, when it all started back in '96, and And, you know, was it just like immediately embraced or was it a little bit of a struggle? And he described basically you going out door to door, bar to bar, trying to grab as many tap handles as you could. And that it was actually pretty tough back in 96. Is
yeah,
that true?
Yeah, yeah, just like that, except, and with the addition of the, oh, yes, it was my great-grandfather's recipe that I found in the attic.
Right.
Okay, no, that last bit is bullshit. The truth is that we actually made the beer ourselves at our brewery, and we went out to a lot of, you got to remember, 1996 was when the first bubble burst in craft brewing, and the growth went from the year before, in 95, about 45% for the industry, to 7% in 96 and 2% in 97. So all of a sudden, everybody that might have purchased a craft beer, wholesalers, retailers, consumers, were now interested in something else. That trend is done. It's dead. Goodbye. Nice to see you. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. And so to say that people were unreceptive would be putting it mildly. And then add to it our troublesome, you know, characteristic of, oh, I don't know, we decided to play with the law. I mean, as in not play and play along with the law, as in, you know, follow the law instead of making up our own rules. So we didn't give illegal discounts. We didn't give illegal free beer, which was pretty rampant here in Southern California at that time. And, you know, so I had plenty of bar owners chew me out. And it's nice to now have, be in the environment where pubs and restaurants, gastropubs, all these great places out there now are excited to do business with us, and we're excited to do business with them. And consumers are excited about our new releases, and we're excited to share them. And
we actually pay for the beer.
And they actually pay for the beer, and they actually sell it, and the people that are buying it are saying, wow, that was a good deal. It's, you know, maybe it wasn't cheap, but it was of good value.
I think that's why that's a mistake that a lot of craft brewers make in the early stages, is they're trying to compete with Budweiser and Coors and Miller. Because those guys can give away everything, and they can, you know, give out hockey tickets and have pretty girls come in and spend lots of money. And craft brewers don't have that kind of budget to do it. So you've got to, like, rely on the quality of the beer. And that's what it comes down to. You know, a bar owner that wants, you know, free stuff constantly. It's nice to get the odd thing for free. I'm not saying it's not good to get, you know, a perk now and again. But as a bar owner, and I think I speak for all the rest of the guys in the room that own bars, it's like, we want to sell good beer, and I want to know what the beer is. I want to know where it came from, what the recipe is, maybe have a little support, but I'm not looking for freebies.
And and as a bar owner, you know, the really savvy bar owners know that if they accept none of that stuff, they'll have a better business by making better quality choices, and they can buy all the stuff that they would have gotten for free. They can buy somebody to go stroke their ego if that's what's really necessary.
That's what it comes down to.
Ray needs that, though, by the way.
Do you have some free beer for Ray?
No, he needs the stroking. He doesn't need the free beer.
All right. Well, thanks, Greg and Mitch. Thanks so much for calling in. We got Dennis. Just tell us about the special event you're doing tomorrow night at Blind Tiger.
Absolutely. We've got a huge event going down at the Blind Tiger Ale House. It's going to feature 14 different unique stone beers, a lot of one-offs, a lot of rarities, a lot of barrel age, a lot of double dry hop goodness. We're also going to be featuring a couple casks. It's going to be Sublimely Self-Righteous, I believe, with Simcoe, and then Ruination with Amarillo. So we're also going to be featuring a lot of cool gargoyle artwork. They're going to be one-offs. Our art department just put that together, and it's going to be a silent auction-style event where we're going to have the artwork up and through Sunday, and all those proceeds. Actually, Dave, you might want to talk about that.
Yeah, we've been talking to Hitachino in Japan, who have shut down operations because of the disaster, and they're bottling water now for people. And so we asked them, or actually through Be United, we've asked them, you know, who to give the money to. And so they're, unfortunately, they've got a lot of power outages, so the emails sort of get, you know, on and off. But they're going to let us know where the money should go. So that's where the proceeds are going to go.
That's great, man. That's really awesome. And then, Dennis, one more thing. So you're saying you guys actually at Stone Brewery, you're making special beers just for an event like this?
We actually do, you know, a lot of the one-offs, like the collaboration beers. We're going to be featuring the Highway 78. That's the latest collaboration we've done with Green Flash and Pizza Port Carlsbad. It's a 8.8% Scotch Ale. That's probably the maltiest beer we've ever produced. We're also going to be featuring a very rare one-off initial collaboration. That's with Ale Smith and McKellar. And that's the triple. So that's going to be unique. We're going to have some barrel
aged. That sounds really good. Yeah.
It's definitely going to be an event to come check out. And also, just you know, when we're talking about the whole collaborative effort, like we actually support a lot of craft homebrewers. You know, again, the next one that's coming out is a competition that was won. I don't know who the gentleman's names were. Maybe Mitch, you can fill in there. I think it was a chocolate cherry stout. Is that correct, Mitch?
Yeah, it was a chocolate cherry stout. It was brewed by a couple of homebrewers, Jason Fields and Kevin Shepherd.
Nice.
And it was a wonderful beer. We're looking forward to brewing it. So it's hopefully it'll be out by early summer.
And what's the I've been hearing rumors about Crime and Punishment. What's that beer all about?
Well, this is Greg.
Sounds painful.
So what do you get when you take a beautiful oak barrel full of double dry hopped Lucky Bastard ale and then ruin it with half half of my harvest of jalapeno, serrano, Thai chili, and Caribbean red hots? Well, that's a crime. That's what you call it. So,
it sounds punishing. That's good.
And then when you do that with a barrel of double bastard ale, because the high alcohol will extract even more of the heat from the peppers, then it's just nothing but pure punishment. So
nice.
There you go.
Nice.
All right. Well, I'm off the
Blind
Tiger
to
tomorrow, yep. And I'll be at Get Real New York, GetRealNY.com,
yep,
this weekend. In fact, many of us will be there. Jimmy's number 43 is doing a serving food and beer pairing at the VIP hour. So our friends at Heritage Radio Network, including HRN's own Dave Arnold, are also working to create the Museum of Food and Drink. And there's a special event coming up March 27th at Del Posto. Check out goodbrewsteel.com for more information. And tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, but today is actually a different day. It's a Finnish Saint's Day, Saint Urdu, which is an honor. Bree, what is it? Our producer, Bree O'Connor, yell it out. What is it?
St. Patrick's Day is on Thursday.
Saint Urho. It's the Finnish guy, and the story from Minnesota is that what they did to punish the Irish is that the day before St. Patrick's Day, the Finns go out and drink all the beer. So when the Irish wake up on St. Patrick's Day, there's no beer left. That's Minnesota. And good luck in Minnesota, Stone, if that's where you're going next. But I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can check out GoodBrewSeal.com. Thanks to Ray, Paul Gatza, Greg Koch, Cook, Mitch Steele, Dave Martin.
The porn star.
That is Patrick, Chris, Mary, and Andy for joining me here tonight on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Foods USA. In late March, Dan, Andrea, Patrick, and the Heritage team are traveling to the coldest reaches of the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont to help the Cantor family tap sugar maple trees. Then the maple sap will flow down to the sugar house where it is boiled gently over a wood fire just as it has been for generations. Just a few days later, this grade A amber syrup will be poured into the beautiful glass jugs and sent to you for pancakes, waffles, desserts, glazing hams, or just drinking by the spoonful.
There's only a limited supply, so order today. Each 1 liter bottle is $45, including delivery. Delivery will be at the end of March, and we will notify you of the exact shipping date. Each shipment will include a CD explaining the whole process. You can also follow us on YouTube while we work and bottle. In the meantime, you can head over to the Heritage Radio Network archives and listen to Linda Palacio talk about maple syrup on her show, A Taste of the Past, Episode 12. For more information, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Omofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of Be Our Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.